Okay, let's start. Next week, the questions for next week's tutorials are, you should have got them, they should have been circulating around. If you didn't, pick them up at the end, or pick one up at the end. It's on the web, of course, but maybe paper's still useful. Yeah, so what I want to start to talk about today is to start to put ideas of pattern recognition into a more coherent framework. So the way the next, how many? Three lectures are going to go. This is five, yeah. The way the next three lectures are going to go are today, I just want to give something of an introduction to statistical pattern recognition, have a little bit of a refresher on basic probability. You may know it all, but I've learned it's worthwhile just going reminding people about it again. And we'll look at using these techniques in one-dimensional problems, so some very simple problems. And then for the next two following lectures, we'll look at one way to extend this to multidimensional problems, and we'll look at a very interesting test case, which is the case of text classification, which is something that you use or is used for you every hour of every day when you're email client or your email server or your ISP does spam detection and so on. So that's how it's going to go for the next three lectures. And how it's going to go for the remainder of the course is we're going to be looking at probabilistic methods. And well, we've sort of been looking at probabilistic methods already, but we're going to ground ourselves in probabilistic methods. Because we live in an uncertain world and we only have limited knowledge at all times, and you've got to make inferences about things you either don't know because you don't have the time or the ability to know it, or maybe you can't know it because it will take too long to compute, or your senses aren't good enough. And when you're dealing with uncertainty, you need to deal with the calculus of uncertainty, and that is probability. And it turns out to be beautifully straightforward in many ways, and often matches our intuitions. But it's the right way to deal with uncertain things. And because of that, probabilistic methods over the past two decades have come to completely dominate in artificial intelligence, and if you want to deal with large problems in artificial intelligence, basically there's kind of very little alternative to dealing with probabilistic methods or to using probabilistic methods. And that's because whereas logic may be the sort of right calculus to use for the artificial worlds of programming languages and languages which you create artificially, the correct language to use for the world where you're always dealing with uncertainty is probability. And that's why it's extremely important. And that's why statistics are extremely important, because statistics are kind of the bridge between the real world. So probability is just mathematics, and it gives you a mathematics for dealing with kind of uncertainties. Statistics is kind of the bridge between that mathematics and the real world. And you're collecting data from the real world, and you want to make the correct inferences with that data. So a lot of people find statistics, it seems kind of tedious and dull, and if you're on some other, you know, if you're on some other physical sciences degree, it seems that you've got the exciting stuff, which is what you signed up to do. You signed up to do physics, or you signed up to do biology or something. Then you've got the really tedious stuff, which is the statistics and kind of analyzing your experimental results or whatever. But I take a long, long time ago, I used to do chemistry, so I see the passion people have for doing this. But don't denigrate statistics, because statistics is the way that you interpret what you observe in the world. And there's kind of nothing more powerful than being able to interpret correctly, or at least interpret rationally, what's going on in the world. End of sermon, on to fish. So this is a very artificial, well, it's a very artificial task. So what we're going to be looking at is our classification task for today is this made-up task where we would like to classify fish into male fish and female fish, and for many species, including the fictitious data we're looking at, male fish tend to be longer than female fish. And you may think this actually is a real problem. And there was a classic paper written about something sort of related to this about 25 years ago. And the data that actually looked at was basically sort of fish sexing data from the Seattle Fisheries Commission, and in particular looking at the lengths of halibut. So it's a real task, and the thing is, if you're the sort of person who likes to have an economic rationale for everything that you're doing, then the economic rationale for this problem is that, of course, fish sexing is something you can do. You can basically check the anatomy, but that's kind of slow and tedious, and it takes a long time. What you'd like to have something is where you can do something on a sort of mass scale, and you can do it quickly, but with reasonable accuracy. And the sort of data you can get very quickly and with reasonable are things like length data. It's very easy to get length data of things. So what our task is that given we've got lengths of fish, can we accurately assign fish to male or female? So we have, in the language of this course, we have a one-dimensional feature vector, which is length. So in a sense, this is even more made up than the apples and pears problem, because there at least we had two dimensions. Here we just have this one-dimensional feature vector, and we'd like to classify it as male or female. And we'll just use this as a way of sort of explaining how we can do statistical pattern recognition in this simple case. And we'll have a bit of a digression in the middle to remind you about probability. So we collect our data. This is data from a number of fish, and we'll plot it as a histogram. So for the convenience of this example, we're going to assume that our length measurements aren't continuous variables, but they come as integer numbers. And the integers correspond to a length in centimeters, if you want to think about it that way. So we can plot a histogram for our lengths of male fish. And similarly, we've got some training data which gives us our lengths of female fish. So this is data for fish where we have an accurate tag for each fish as to whether it's male or female. We don't have to infer this. This is training data, and it has labels. But what's going to happen is that test data is going to come along, and we just have the lengths, and then we'd like to classify these test items as male or female. So these are our histograms. We have the length going along the x-axis, and we have the frequency, the number at that length, on the y-axis. So you can see that for male fish, we sort of have a peak at about 12, and for female fish, we have a peak at 9. If you want, we can start to think of these raw frequencies are all very good, but of course, a frequency of 12, you don't know if that's big or small until you know how many fish you looked at in total. So rather than looking at our raw frequencies, we can just turn them into relative frequencies. So that's just simply for each fish, we're just dividing the number of a particular length by the total number of male fish in the red case and female fish in the blue case. So we just convert it to relative frequencies. The shape of the histogram stays the same. We've just changed the scale. Okay. Now, if you wanted a way to perform male-female discrimination on fish, then we could just define a decision boundary. And we're going to talk about decision boundaries, actually, in a little bit more depth one day. We can define a decision boundary, which we'll put here at about 11 centimetres. And anything to the left of it, anything smaller than 11 centimetres, will classify as female, and anything to the right will classify as male. And that looks pretty good, and it's probably about the right place to place it, because what we want to do is kind of minimise the probability of error, so you want as little mass as possible to the right in blue and to the left in red. And if you move the line a little bit to the left, then you would make fewer red errors, but you'd make an increased number of blue errors. If you moved it a bit to the right, then vice versa. So this is about the right place to go and put that sort of decision boundary based on this data. So that's how we might define our classifier. And then you might think, great, we've got our fish classifier. We just measure it. If it's more than 11, it's male, and if it's less than 11, it's female. So the intuition there's right. Let's go and have a look more. Let's go a little bit of a closer look and start to write this down in terms of probabilities. So we can think of our relative frequency as an estimate of the length being a particular integer value. So we're just dealing with integers here. We're still in a discrete domain. Of the length being a particular integer value, given that the class is male or the class is female. So we're going to define two what we call random variables here. Call them x for the length and c for the class. And then the data that we plotted in our histogram, we can say that they're estimates of these two types of probabilities. The probability of x given the class equals male, and the probability of x given the class equals female. So you might say that the relative frequency here is saying that the probability that x equals 11 given male is about, I don't know, 0.22 or something. So those are the probabilities of our that we use to define our problem, and we're defining our problem just in terms of these two random variables. This is the information we have to work with. We have the length information and we have the class information. So the length information can take a non-negative integer number or even a positive integer. It's a natural number basically, in this case. And the class can take one of two things, male or female. Okay, now we were sort of quite happy, and I didn't hear anybody disagreeing when I said this seems a reasonable place to put our decision boundary. But imagine that you know that there's 10 times as many male fish as there are female fish. Does that change anything on the way we're going to put our decision boundary? What would you do with the decision boundary?
More towards male fish. So there are more male fish.
Exactly. Because you've got, and basically we'll see this any second, that you've got these sort of two forces, right? You've got the you can call it the data force, which is these probabilities we've been looking at, the relative frequencies of the probability of the length being a certain value given the class. And then we have what you can think of as the prior force. And these are the prior probabilities, which is the kind of probability of occurrence of male and the probability of occurrence of female. So you might write this as the prior class equals male, and prior class equals female. In this case, if the prior class equals male would be like they've got a sum to 1, so prior class equals male would be 10 elevenths, and prior class equals female is 1 11th. So they have that factor of 10 between them. And we'll see precisely how to handle this. But first, let's just have a little bit of probability refresher. So we're used to kind of dealing with probabilities. This may all be incredibly straightforward to you, or you may have seen it once and forgotten it. So just sit for the ride for 15 minutes, and then we'll get back to the fish you're probably anxiously waiting for. Okay, so to set things up, we have a red box, except it looks red on my screen, but it looks kind of brown on your projector. And we have a green box. And in each box, we have some oranges and apples. So the oranges are the orange circles, and the apples are the green circles. So in the red box, we have 6 oranges, 2 apples. And in the green box, we have 1 orange and 3 apples. And we can make a kind of prior probability that the probability of choosing each box, and who knows where these come from, but there's a slightly greater probability of choosing the box, the green box, that's got a probability of choosing it of 0.6, whereas the probability of choosing the red box is 0.4. These things have to sum to 1 because there's only 2 boxes. And then we can write down some information given the setup that we have, and the information that we can immediately write down is in terms of conditional probabilities. So the conditional probabilities is like the probability of a fruit. If you kind of just make a draw from a box, what's the and you know it's the red box, you're conditioning on the red box, what's the probability that you draw an apple and what's the probability that you draw an orange? Well, in the red box there's 8 pieces of fruit, and we'll assume you've got an equal chance of picking any of them. And 6 of them are oranges and 2 of them are apples. So the probability that fruit is an apple, given you go in the red box, is 2/8, 2 apples, 8 pieces of fruit. And the probability that fruit's an orange, given you go in the red box, is 6/8, 6 oranges and 8 pieces of fruit, which is 1/4 and 3/4. Likewise, we can do the same thing for the green box. In this case, the probability of getting the fruit being an apple given the green box is 3/4 and a quarter for getting an orange, because it's just 1 out of the 4 fruit. So the important thing to realize is that we've set up our problem, and from the sort of observations and knowledge of the world we have, so the observations gives us ways of getting these conditional probabilities in this particular problem, the probabilities of fruit given a box. And it's important to remember that there's a difference between a conditional probability and a joint probability, because in a conditional probability, you're assuming that piece of information to the right-hand side of the bar. And the other information we're given were the bits I showed you before, the prior probabilities of each box. Okay, so what the rules of probability enable us to do is to make some inferences about other things given these probabilities that we know. So let's just go through the most important things in probability. So we have the sum rule. So we can express the probability of a random variable x in terms of the sum over the joint probabilities of x and y. So this is a joint probability, x and y, and we sum over all possible values of y. So this is kind of intuitive. We're looking in our particular world here, we're looking in a world of 2 random variables, and a random variable of x equals xi, well, it can occur in L different ways according to the L different possible values of y. So if you want to know the overall probability of x equals xi, then it's the sum from j equals 1 to L of the joint probability of p of x equals xi and y equals yj, and it's the j's we sum over. And then we have the product rule, which enables us to express a joint probability in terms of the conditional probability and this probability of just p of p x equals x equals of just p of x. So you can go both ways. You can express p of y equals yj and x equals xi to be p of y equals yj given x equals xi times the prior P x equals xi, or we can do it the other way around, where we have P of x given y times the prior of py. So what this is saying is that the joint probability is equal to the product of the conditional probability where you're conditioning on x multiplied by the prior probability of x. So the first term you're assuming x, the second term is, well, what's the probability of x? What's the probability of that assumption? To make things simpler, we sometimes just get rid of the sort of x equals xi type of information and just write it in terms of random variables. So these things are called conditional probabilities, and these things are called joint probabilities. These things are sometimes called marginal probabilities. And I only found out it always seemed a bit odd to me that they're called, I mean, everybody calls them marginal probabilities. It always seemed a bit odd that why they should be called marginal probabilities. I only found out recently why. And the reason is that if you go back, well, actually, if you go back only 75 years ago, the word computer didn't mean this sort of thing. It meant this sort of thing. And if you go back to Turing's 1937 paper, where he refers to computers, he's not talking about valves or mechanical things. He's talking about people, because people were computers. And if you went to a company like Scottish Widows in 1930, you would find large compute clusters. But the compute clusters would be rooms of people exactly like you, as you all have mathematical aptitude and can do arithmetic, sitting at desks with lots of tables, and you would be doing arithmetic, and you would be looking up stuff in log tables when you needed to make multiplications and so on, and those were computers. Now, if you were working for Scottish Widows, you might well have tables of probabilities, and insurance companies have great tables of probabilities because they know lots of information about when you die and what age you die at, so they have all these actuarial tables. And very often these actuarial tables, you know, you might be looking at different factors, so I don't know, age and sex or whatever, so you'd get big tables of joint probabilities. So, you know, a table of joint probabilities is just, you know, if you've got two joint probabilities, you sort of have the you know, the x values along here and the y's down here, you know, y3. So this thing here would be the probability of y2, the joint probability of y2 and x3. So you get these big tables. Now, if you sum along a row, if you like sum along this row here, then you're like summing across all the y's, so you're performing the sum rule. So you sum across all the y's, so you'd end up with the probability, or you're summing across all the x's, sorry, so you'd end up with the probability of y2. And the reason these things were called marginal probabilities is because you would, being a computer, you would write them down in the margins of the tables. So you would do the summation and you would write down the marginal probability, the probability of y2 summed over all possible values of x, and you would write that down in the margins of the tables. And hence, ever since a long time ago, when people used to sit in rooms dealing with these tables of joint probabilities for actuarial reasons, we called the output of the sum rule the marginal probability. So if you sum over the joint, if you sum across all values of one variable for the joint, you get the marginal probability. You've summed out the, or you've taken account of all possible values of y in the sum, and we're just looking at the, and we get the probability of x. I can categorically state there will not be an exam question asking for the derivation of the term marginal probability. Everything else I say may be examinable. You want to put these two together, you get a very useful way of expressing the sum rule, which is so useful it has its own name, the law of total probability. And that's basically, well, very often you may not have the joint probability directly, but you have a conditional and a marginal of the other thing, of py, or a prior as you call it in that case. So we can represent p of x as a sum over all values of y of p of x given y times py. And that's the law of total probability. The Reverend Bayes, graduate of this university, probably not in mathematics, unfortunately, in theology, is extremely famous. You can visit his grave in Tunbridge Wells, should you be so inspired. Wrote down Bayes' theorem. And Bayes' theorem is an extremely useful thing to have, because basically it gives you a way of relating one lot of conditional probabilities with another lot of conditional, with the sort of reverse conditional probability. So it gives you a way of relating P of Y given X to P of X given Y. And it's just through a manipulation of the previous equations. As it happens, so Bayes surely did write this down in a rather opaque form, but it has to be said that and he's become famous. You may well have heard the term Bayesian, ask me another time about Bayesian when we've done a little bit more. Suffice it to say, it has a sort of precise meaning. It's kind of misused too often. If you're applying Bayes' rule, that is not what people people mean by Bayesian. Basically, if you're doing Bayesian statistics, everything has a probability distribution over it. And that includes the parameters that you're using. So if as part of your parameters you're estimating means, then in fact you put probability distributions, prior probabilities, expressing your belief in terms of probability distribution of what the mean might be before you see any data. This is almost certainly the right way to do inference from the real world. Amazingly, another amazing thing about statistics is that until quite recently, and there's still a kind of legacy sort of debates going on about it, there was passionate, furious debate about the very fundamentals of the subject, about the very interpretation of probability, and this went on all through the 20th century, and it's only kind of dying down recently. Again, statistics isn't as dry as you think it is. Bayes' theorem, very useful thing for going from conditional probabilities X given Y to conditional probabilities Y given X. Let's have a look at an example of how we might use these statistical relations. So remember, this is our boxes example, and this is our information which we've written in terms of probabilities, in terms of the prior probability of each box, and in terms of the conditional probability of the type of fruit given the colour of the box. We have three problems. How do we go ahead and solve them? Problems one and two are basically, highly closely related. What's the overall probability of choosing an apple, and what's the overall probability of choosing an orange when we're saying nothing about the boxes? And then finally, you shut your eyes, you turn around, you go in a box, you don't know which one, you take something out and you see that it is an apple. And what you want to know is, aha, I've got an apple, what's the probability it came from the red box rather than the green box? These are all very straightforward. To find the probability that the fruit that you would choose is an apple, you need to use the law of total probability, because if you're choosing an apple, then what we're doing is we're marginalizing away or summing out one of the variables. In this case, we care about the fruit being an apple. We don't care whether the box is red or if it's green. And in this case, we only have two boxes. So to find out the probability that the fruit is an apple, we do the sum of the probability the fruit is an apple and the box is red, plus the probability the fruit is an apple and the box is green. These are the only two alternatives. We have a very simple world here. The world consists of the random variable f for fruit and the random variable b for box. And each of those has two possible values. So it makes it nice and simple. In terms of the data we have, you might want to write the joint probabilities as the product of the conditional times the prior. This is just the relation we saw. So we can write that, so P of F equals A and B equals R is just P of F equals A given B equals R, multiplied by the probability B equals R, and then likewise for the green box. This is good, we have these numbers. The probability that fruit's an apple given the box is red is a quarter. The prior probability of the box being red is 4/10. And for the other side, the conditional probability is 3/4, and the prior probability is 6/10. You do the multiplications and add, and we find that the result is 11/20, just over a half. So the probability of getting an apple is just over a half, 11/20. Bear in mind, the difference, you don't get this result if you just count the apples and pears, and the reason is that the prior probabilities of the boxes are different, and you have to take those into account. You want to do it for an orange, you can do exactly the same sort of calculation, but you can do it a little bit faster once you've done probability of fruits and apple, because you know there's only two types of fruit, apple and orange, so you know probability of fruits and orange plus probability of fruits and apple is 1. So we can say probability fruits and orange is 1 minus probability fruits and apples, so 9/20. Straightforward. Now, the third question. A teeny bit less straightforward, but still straightforward. Suppose we know that an apple was chosen, but we don't know which box it came from. So the sort of probabilities that we have is that we have the probability, we have the probabilities of fruit given box, but what we want to find out is the probability of box given fruit, because it's the type of fruit that's the given information, not the box. So this is a situation in which we can use Bayes' rule. Because we want to, in this case, we want to evaluate the probability that the box was red given the fruits and apple, and also the probability the box is green given fruits and apple. So Bayes' theorem lets us solve this because it relates these two types of conditional. So the probability that fruits and apple given the box is red is 1/4, that's information we have, and the probability that the box is red is 4/10, that's information we had. And the normalization term on the in the denominator of Bayes' rule is just the total probability that the fruit is an apple. And we just computed that, and it's 11/20. So we can then go ahead and we can cancel out, and we get the probability that the box is red, given that the fruit is an apple, is 2/11. If you want to know the probability the box is green, given fruit's an apple, well, since we only have two types of box, box equals green and box equals red, again, we can just do this 1 minus the previous answer, and of course that gives us 9/11. So again, the important point, and an important point to note, is that we're integrating this prior information together with the sort of data we get from counting apples in boxes. So those are the that's the sort of classic way, or the useful thing that Bayes' rule is good for. It's when the data you have is the probability of your random variable conditioned on some things, but the problem you have is where you're just given, in this case, the random variable f, and you have to use Bayes' rule to relate these two reversed or these two conditional probabilities. This type of thing is at the heart of pattern recognition. So one of the key equations, and it's one of these things that seems remarkably simple, and the key equations in pattern recognition is we would like to have an equation for how we choose, how we classify a vector x as a class, into a particular class. So we have a number of classes which we'll call CK. And the rule we have is we estimate the probability of the class given the observed data, and we go and find the class for which that posterior probability is maximum. This is what the argmax operator does. It finds the max bit is finding the probability over all possible CKs, which one's the biggest, and the arg just tells you which CK it is. So this is this argmax. And we use that as our classification. And it's really straightforward. We just choose the class with the biggest probability of the class given the data. It can be shown, and you will see it, that doing this will also minimize the probability of misclassification. So minimize the probability of misclassification is a good thing. It means not getting things wrong. So this posterior probability is the key thing. And we can re-express it using Bayes' theorem. Because remember, the sort of probabilities we got in our fish example weren't the probability of male given the length, but the probability of length given male and the probability of length given female, because that's how our data comes. We get a bunch of male fish and get a bunch of female fish. We can use Bayes' theorem to express the posterior in terms of the things we have, and basically, so we have the posterior probability of class given data is the ratio, or is basically what we can call the likelihood, the probability of the data given the class. So in this case, this would be the probabilities we were looking at before, which we estimated using relative frequencies, the probability of the length given male or the length given female, and then the prior probability of the class. The prior probability of the fish being male or the fish being female, which maybe you don't know anything, so you take it as 0.5 for both classes. Maybe, like in the question earlier, you know that one is 10 elevenths and one is 1 11th. These posterior probabilities have to sum to 1, so we need to normalize by the marginal probability of x. An important thing to realize is that this term in the denominator does not depend on the class. It does not depend on CK. So if you want to compare posterior probabilities for different classes, you don't necessarily have to compute the denominator. If you imagine taking the probability of C1 given x and the probability of C1 given x and its ratio to the probability of C2 given x, so you're looking at one divided by the other, then these PXs would cancel out because they don't depend on the class. So you don't always have to compute them. And it's these two terms at the top which for our purposes are the most important. But you might want to have the posterior probability, so you can easily compute the denominator. You get it by using the law of total probability. And that's just taking a sum over all classes of the product of the conditional probability of the data given the class multiplied by the prior probability of the class. Back to the fish. So suppose we have some data. Suppose we had 100 examples of male fish and 100 examples of female fish, and we estimated the probabilities with these relative frequencies. And I think these numbers approximately correspond to the histograms before. Maybe they don't. I think they do. So we have these probabilities of length given class, length given male, and length given female. And we've got them for x values from 4 to 20. So that means we can easily compute our posterior probabilities just by using Bayes' rule. And if you want to compute the full posterior probability, you can compute P of x just using that expression. Alternatively, as I said, you might just want to look at the ratios. So we call this ratio of the posterior probabilities, we refer to this as the odds. And this is basically the way you compute the odds for if you were offering odds in the horse race or whatever. So you compute the odds, and then you can see we're just taking the ratio of these, so we can express them both using Bayes' rule. The P of X is cancel out, so we just have this ratio where we have the probability of length given class or length given male times the prior probability of male over the probability of length given female times the prior probability of female. So if we look at this ratio and we compute the ratio, if it's greater than 1, then we would for a new vector x or a new piece of data x whose class we don't know, if this ratio is greater than 1, then we would classify it as male. If it's less than 1, we would classify it as female, just because of this maximum posterior probability rule. So if we look at doing some test data, just as some quick examples, if you have x equals 5, and we'll assume equal prior probabilities, so the probability of male equals the probability of female equals 0.5, then looking at the numbers from the table, we find that's 1/7. If we look at 16, then we find that we get the value 2. And likewise, for 9, you get a value of 1/3. And for 12, you get a value of 5.5. So if it's 5, you would classify it as female. If the length is 16, you would classify it as male. If the length is 9, you would classify it as female. And if the length is 12, you would classify it as male. So this is all very straightforward and corresponding to the decision rule. If we're looking at x equals 11 and we've got equal prior probabilities, then we find it's 1.4, the ratio, so the odds are 1.4, so we classify it as male. Say the prior probabilities differ, so females are twice as likely as males, then we find that the ratio turns to 0.7. So in this case, if you've got a fish whose length was 11, changing the prior probability moves the decision boundary, and in this case, a fish of length 11 would become classified as female rather than classified as male. I think you've got the data in the notes in front of you, but so assume a prior probability of males is 0.75, and you find a fish of length x equals 10. To which class should it be assigned? So prior probability is 0.75, and you're looking at x equals 10, and there's the data. So what are the odds? What's the ratio? Has anybody done it?
About a fifth.
More than one. That's correct. And nobody did it. Let's try again. What's the numerator going to be? What is the form of the numerator? We want our odds. What do I write?
0.06.
Are you giving me the answer? Or are you giving, yeah, okay. And what is the you can give it to me as a multiplication if you want. Sorry, say it again. So the reason this is 0.06 is you read off the table and the probability of x equals 10 given male is 0.08. And the prior is 0.75. So on the, and that's going to be 0.06. And the denominator, what do we want in the denominator? The faster you do this, the faster the lecture's over. Sorry?
0.19
times what? Times
0.25.
0.475, I think, something like that. It's actually 19 divided by 4. It's not a, you know, I know even in the days of kind of calculators, computers, 19 over 4, you know, it's like 4 3/4. Okay. You all owe him a coffee at least, because otherwise we'd be here forever if you hadn't been giving me the answers. So, anyway. Right, you will have plenty of more exercises on this. You know. These are questions to think about, and we'll address the issues at some point next week. But you may realize that the value of that is zero, and the value of that is zero, and we've never observed any fish as big as length equals 20. So you might want to think what you might want to do in that situation. That'll do.